Hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and also broadcasting on and in association with Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to Air Lane by Gary Newman. I hope you enjoy it. Track one there from Gary's debut solo album, The Pleasure Principle, an absolute classic track of electronic music, very progressive, very new at the time. It's one of those things, if you ask people of a certain vintage and generation, people in the 50s and older, of what they remember from the late 70s and Top of the Pops, everybody remembers when Newman came on and did Our Friends Electric and thought, this is something new, this is something really, really different and special. Anyway, hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. So I've been listening to Newman a lot recently because I found this fantastic, well, I was researching a video which is out now on my YouTube channel for those who want to check it out, about a music video made by the band Soft Cell that was so outrageous that it was banned. But as part of the research, I found an interview with the video's director Tim Pope on a podcast called Electronically Yours with Martin Ware. Martin Ware from the Human League, Heaven 17, all his solo stuff. He does this amazing podcast where he interviews his mates and people to do with music and other areas of life. And he did a brilliant one with Gary Newman that was an hour and a half long. And they talked about music, but they just talked about life in general and Newman's take on the world and perception on things. And it was genuinely fascinating. And Newman said in that As a child, his grandparents lived right next to Heathrow Airport, so as a kid he used to just go out and lay in the garden and watch all these planes land, and he said they were like roaring alien spaceships and machines, and that's where he got all his ideas from. And he said all he was trying to do with the synthesizers all his life was to recreate and capture the magic of those planes flying low overhead when he was a kid, and I just think that's absolutely incredible. We've got something a little bit more low-key now with track 2 from Genesis' 1972 album Foxtrot. This is Timetable by Genesis.
A carved oak table tells a tale of times when kings and queens sipped wine from goblets gold, and the brave would lead their ladies from out the room to arms cool. A time of valor and legends born, a time when honor meant much more to a man than life, and the days you only strive to tell right from wrong through lance and sword.
I really like Timetable. That's the Banks track of the album. A lot of Genesis albums have a Banks track. I think most of them do. And it's the one where it's just a Tony Banks thing. Nobody else really contributes to it in a massive way other than just playing everything that Banks has written. Other good Banks tracks include the track A Trick of a Tale from the Trick of the Tale album. And I guess to an extent Cul-de-Sac on Duke and things like that. But yeah, there's a lot of Banks songs in Genesis. And the Banks songs, the ones that are solely Tony Banks, never really do well. They never really get played live that much, and they're not really that popular or successful, but I like the Banks tracks. I really enjoy Timetable. It's one of my not one of my favorite Genesis songs, but every time I put it on, and in the context of the album, it's a really nice break. Like, can you imagine if we went straight from Watcher of the Skies into Get 'Em Out by Friday? It'd be a little bit too extreme, especially for like a first few times to get into the album. I feel like Timetable served a purpose to kind of ease the ears of the new listener when the album came out back in 72, and I feel like it served that purpose brilliantly. Next up, we've got a little bit of UK with a song from the band's second and, well, I guess their final, sadly, studio album, 1979's Danger Money. This one was the hit single, or was supposed to be the hit single of the album. There's a great video of them playing it live, the new pop promo videos that they started doing at the time. They did one for Nothing for this next track, and it's very cheesy. It's just the three band members on a stage playing it, looking incredibly cold and chilly, and it's a bit of a cheesy song, but I really enjoy it. It's quite fun. This is Nothing to Lose by UK.
Nothing to lose.
It's just great fun, that track. I think that's all I can really say about it. It's a lot of fun. It's the, I don't know, Danger Money in some ways, I don't know, was it doomed to fail as an album just because, yes, it's more accessible, yes, they were trying to do more direct songwriting, but I think it lacked the kind of, the magical element of the first album, and I don't know, there was just, you know, I think that they wanted to be, I don't know, who were they trying to be, I guess, is what we think of when we're trying to think Danger Money. What were they modelling themselves off going in this new pop direction? I mean, Genesis had not done the pop thing yet. A lot of bands had not. I don't know. I think it was just they wanted to play bigger places. But anyway, regardless, it's a great album. And that one's a great song. That's a lot of fun. Next up, we've got a bit of a weird one from the second album from the duo that was Bruford and Mraz. Bill Bruford and Patrick Mraz are two jazzos, basically, who found themselves in rock and prog rock bands throughout the 70s, both in Yes, but obviously at different points in time. Bill Bruford with Yes up until the end of Close to the Edge, then he leaves. Patrick Mraz comes into Yes for just the Relayer album and then leaves after that, or gets fired, or whichever, I think he was fired, but whichever way you want to look at it. But both of them, I was reading a review of this album, and the great point that the reviewer made was that they both had their day jobs, which was playing like rock music and progressive rock, but outside from their day jobs, they loved jazz, and they just wanted to do jazz. And at some point down the line in the early 80s, they formed a duo. They did a few albums. The first album is Music for Piano and Drums, and as the title suggests, it's just piano and drums for the full album. The second one has some synthesizers sprinkled in there as well, and it's a bit more palatable. It's a bit kind of closer to the kind of rock and fusion thing that they were doing, like the band Bruford, for example, in the late 70s, whereas the first one and a lot of the tracks are just straight what I'd call jazz, and I can't really get into them. This is one of my favourites off the second album, Flags. I think it was released in 85 or 86. This is Temples of Joy by Patrick Mraz and Bill Bruford. it's just a lot of fun, that. I would say the only real criticism I have with a lot of that album is the kind of... I mean, I know it was new at the time. Bruford was integrating a lot of electronic drums into his setup. He was a big fan of the Simmons kit. But I would say at certain points, it kind of washes with the sound of Patrick Mraz's synthesizers, and it's really hard to tell, like, what's Bruford playing and what's Patrick Mraz, like, triggering from a keyboard, like the hi-hats and stuff, for example. What is being actually played and what is being triggered from a keyboard and stuff, and what's being played by the Simmons drums, and that kind of... Not ruins it, but it kind of changes the sound of it quite a little bit. You know, like, a lot of them just mesh with the synth layer, so you don't really fully appreciate what Bill Bruford's doing. The same thing I feel happened with the Earthworks material, but regardless, a really great... I've just complained about all the tracks I've played today, despite saying that I really enjoy them, but no, it's a good song. I really enjoy that. Next up, we have some new progressive rock from a band, Little Project, which I'm involved in, which was rather nice to be... It's always nice to be asked to play on things. Like, it's always a great honour when people say, oh, I think you'd be great on this. I don't actually play on this track, I play on the next ones that are coming up, but the new project is Age of Distraction, headed up by one John Cook, who is the current guitarist in This Winter Machine, who are currently working on their fourth studio album titled The Clockwork Man. But anyway, this is John's solo thing. It's a vehicle. He's a great guitarist, and this is a vehicle for his kind of heavier, kind of more moody and kind of more metal kind of stuff that he writes. And this song was a real surprise the first time I heard it, because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't really know John or his music that well at all. And the only reason I found out about it was because we're getting onto true prog networking now, is that my good friend Charlie Brummel from Ghost of the Machine, he wrote the lyrics and sang on the track, and then another mutual friend, Don Benenson, produced it and played drums on it. And the track officially came out on Friday, so it's still a fairly new song. I would say check it out, stream it on Spotify, listen to it on YouTube, go and like the band's page and stuff like that. But as a first single, I think it's a great song. It's very heavy, it's very modern, it's very progressive. Reminds me a lot of, it's kind of like Dream Theater meshed with Metallica a little bit, is what I thought when I first heard it, but I really enjoy it as a track. This is Compromised by the Age of Distraction. brilliant, brilliant first single there from Age of Distraction. Check them out. I will be on the next single and the next few ones coming out after that. So, of course, I'll be plugging those. I'm going to get John and Charlie on the show at some point to plug the project and talk about it. But go check them out, Age of Distraction. Absolutely wonderful stuff. Really good to listen to. Next up, we have got a little bit of Peter Gabriel. Got a little bit of Peter Gabriel later on in the show, but I thought we'd start off with one of his kind of more forgotten tracks from his worst album. His worst album, without a doubt, I think, is Peter Gabriel 2. It's the one that nobody remembers, apart from the track On The Air. It didn't have any hits, apart from On The Air. And it's the one that nobody really talks about. Everybody remembers at least. Everyone always remembers, of course, Salisbury Hill off the first album. Third album had a lot of hits. Third album's obviously got Games Without Frontiers. It's got Biko, Intruder. Fourth album, he had Shock the Monkey as the big single. But the second album, I think maybe that's why people don't remember it. It didn't have the classic memorable single, unfortunately. But it's a good album. I feel like the biggest problem it suffers from is its production. It sounds dreadful compared with 1 and 3. 1 has got this amazing big sound. People say it's overproduced, it's got too much going on. But I quite like that about it. It's produced by Bob Ezrin. And 2 is produced by Robert Fripp. And it kind of has this minimalism kind of thing going on about it. But there's some good tracks on there. There's some great stuff on there. It was the first Peter Gabriel album I ever had. I think I inherited it from I got it off my dad. I think he had it when he was a kid. But there's some good stuff on there. And I'm going to play one of my favourite tracks from it now. This is White Shadow by Peter Gabriel.
We'll be right back.
It's a great track. It's a lot of fun, very experimental. I feel like the Fripp element comes through more on Peter Gabriel 2 than it does on anything else that Fripp ever did with Peter Gabriel. I mean, Fripp's there. Is Fripp on Peter Gabriel 4? I think he is. Fripp's there on the first four albums, doing his thing that Robert Fripp does, and he's most pronounced on the second because, of course, he's producing it, he's playing most of the guitars on it, and he does some great stuff on there. I love the kind of soundscape thing that he's got going on as well. No doubt Eno had a hand in that, Fripp's best pal, who he used to hang around with in the 70s and 80s, but no, it's a good song, that. I'm seeing Peter Gabriel live this week on Friday at Manchester Arena, and let me tell you, I am so excited. It's unbelievable. A lot of people have been complaining about the set list, but I have no issues whatsoever. I feel like he can do what he wants. He has nothing left to prove. He wants to just play new songs, Pete, and have a few old ones in there, and I'm happy with that. Moving on now to something a little bit different. We had a bit of Newman in the beginning. Here's a kind of track from a similar era by OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. This is one of the hits off their first album, and it's got a pretty interesting sound to it, OMD, because of course they've got the drum machines on some tracks, real drums on others, and then they've got the synthesizers, but they've also got real bass, and that real bass element, kind of like the Newman stuff, it really, really drives it along, it really kind of pushes it hard, and it gives it kind of a rockier kind of edge than things that were 100% synthesized, because of course, as humans, we can't play in time. There's no way around that. We can't play things that are perfectly in time, whereas drum machines, synthesizers, synth bass can all be made with the likes of MIDI and gates and stuff, and they can all be quantized so that they're perfectly on time to give them this robotic kind of feel, which really works for synth pop. But every time when there's a human element in there, it kind of bodes really well. It makes it interesting to our ears, and it makes us kind of appreciate it, and it makes it sound more natural. And OMD are a great example of that. This is Electricity by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. kind of almost like a more upbeat version of Radioactivity by Kraftwerk, if you think about it. But it's just a great song. It's got a lot of power to it. It's just, I don't know, it's got something there that I really like. It's just, it's very fun. And of course, the real bass kind of contrasts really nicely against the drum machine and everything that's going on that. Drum machine's really interesting. The hi-hats on that have got all that kind of wash and phase on it and gives it a really kind of distinctive and unique sound. Next up, we've got a track from the band Eloy. The album cover for this is just absolutely phenomenal. I think it's called Time to Turn. I'm just looking at it now as I'm about to play. It's called Time to Turn, and the album cover just blew my mind when I first looked at it, and I thought the album cover was so good. Even if the album was terrible, it was worth talking about it and playing the track on it just because the cover was so great. But this is a great song, as there was all the songs. It's very, very German. It's influenced by all, of course, the English progressive rock bands, and one of the saving graces of it, which have made them an enduring band, was the fact that they sung in English, which kind of gave them more popularity, more exposure, I guess. It was easy for us to digest it and understand it. But this is Through a Somber Galaxy by Eloy. Thank you.
change of an era has come, a new age is born, as it's been for since so long. A period of thought and insight, man must survive. There is conjured his chances, so many a time. And ask for the gift of life more than twice. His final round of luck has come down. His final round of luck has come down.
It's got the Pink Floyd bit in the middle, which just sounds like, was it sheep or something? It sounds a lot like sheep and animals. They're dun, dun. Just, I don't know, it's funny, the Cadelli obviously were majorly inspired, should we say, by that. But it's a great song in its own right. It is a lot of fun, like a lot of the bands on the back have. Like I said, cool feel about it. It's Pink Floyd with a little bit more energy mixed in with a little bit of Genesis and Emerson, Lake and Palmer in there as well for good measure. Next up, we've got a little bit of Alan Holdsworth with a song which showcases one of his rare talents, which was that for playing the violin. This is maybe the only track of his where he plays violin on it, and he does a violin solo on it, which is comes shortly after Gary Husband's piano solo. And it's just absolutely mind-blowing. He could have been a violin virtuoso in his own right. He played violin on a bunch of other stuff that he did. I think he played violin on a Tempest track and on something with Soft Machine. But when you hear him play on this, you just think, why didn't he do it again? Why did he have to stick to guitar? It would have been so much more exciting if on every album there was one track that had a mind-blowing violin solo. But hey-ho. This is Temporary Fault by Alan Holdsworth.
Thank you.
It's annoying because it's so good, that violin solo. It's the one that track is, you know, it's short and sweet. The piano solo from Gary Husband, of course, it's excellent, as all those piano solos are, but I don't know. I want more of the violin. I want more of Holdsworth's violin playing, because it does sound like him. That's the weirdest thing about it. When he's doing the solo, and it's still those mind-blowing scales that he's using on guitar. He's not trying to play it in a classical way. He's playing it in his own way, which he played guitar. But anyway, I thought we'd go out, since I'm seeing Peter Gabriel this Friday, with Peter Gabriel's latest single, Offering, which came out on the last full moon. And it's a great song. It's a great pop song. It features all of Gabriel's best stuff. It's a great song with a lot of experimental sounds and percussion in there. And I'm excited to hear it if he plays it live. This is Road to Joy by Peter Gabriel. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
To flow in every nook and cranny. Get the universe opens up the distant star that gives you straight just who you are. I'm more a dog, you're more a cat, then we've gotten bored of that. Alive again.